What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. You've got me, Tom, and Lotus, as usual, and we are digging deeper into this iceberg. We are down 14 layers of 500 and something different lore topics, and we're starting at the 15th, and we're going to see how much further we get in this episode. And we've got some fun ones to talk about this week, Lotus. I'm excited. Are you?
Yeah, some of these seem pretty interesting. Some of them are super short. Other ones are super not short.
Super not short. But this is more of an overview of a lot of these.
Yeah,
we could probably do entire episodes. In fact, we have done entire episodes.
Oh, I was going to say, some of these. Just going to reference back to the episode where we did go super in depth on it.
Right, right. So here, let's get it going. We're going to kick this off with a fun one. If you've played through Skyrim and you've been to Winterhold and the College of Winterhold, you've probably realized that a lot of people have different explanations for the reason why Winterhold or the College especially is still standing, whereas large portions of Winterhold fell into the sea. And this is the 15th entry on this iceberg, the Great Collapse Conspiracies. Basically, Skyrim's residents believe that the College of Winterhold was responsible for the Great Collapse of Winterhold, and the player can also join in on that conversation with some dialogue. And there is a specific text that I want to talk about that has basically an explanation of what's going on from the perspective of the college to the Jarl in order to try to, I guess, not take responsibility for this.
Smooth things over.
Yeah, maybe that's the best way to say it. So yeah, like we normally do.
It's not our fault.
It's not our fault. We're just the mages, and we're victims of this too. But here, I'm going to read through it. Lotus, you're going to chime in. We're going to do like we normally do. But this is called the... what is the name of this one? On the Great Collapse. I had to scroll up. I had to scroll too far down. By Archmage Denith to the esteemed Jarl Valdemar of Winterhold, who was the Jarl during the Great Collapse. First, please allow me to offer my most sincere condolences. I understand that you, like many others, have lost family, and you have my deepest sympathies. So pretty solid start there. Hey, we're all going through this tragedy, right?
Yeah. Oh, this is bad. Yeah. You know, I feel for you.
I feel for you. Everybody's lost some things. I know you've lost some things. Sorry about that. Goes on. I also understand that some of your council have placed the blame for this horrible disaster on my colleagues at the college. While I can certainly appreciate the shock at the scope of recent events and the desire to comprehend what has happened, I must strongly urge you to consider the full situation. This feels like it was written by a college professor, right? The way
without a doubt, or a PR team.
Oh, yeah, the way it's kind of framed. You know as well as any the college's history and reputation in Winterhold. It has long been a source of pride for your city, a unique fixture in Skyrim. Some of the greatest wizards have studied here, and the college has always promoted positive relations with the other provinces of Tamriel. This feels like, now it's starting to feel like a marketing thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's why this feels a little PR-ish.
Yeah, yeah, like he's trying to like... use the angle here to be like, hey, before we all jump to conclusions, remember, like, we're cool, right?
Even if you think it is our fault, you like owe us, because look at all the stuff we do for you.
Right. Like, we've been good. We've been good for a long time. Why you got to throw us under the bus? But it goes on. It is well known that those relations have been, shall we say, strained over the last few decades. After the Oblivion Crisis, it was only natural that the people of Tamriel showed a distrust of mages. Even though the vast majority of us actively worked to counter the actions of the Mythic Dawn cult, the college expected such a reaction and hoped that distrust would fade over time. This is starting to feel like we talk about real world corollaries all the time, but this idea of like, well, the scientists are wrong because they got that, I don't know, I won't get into specifics, but like this thing that they told us would be safe wasn't safe, and so they're against us and they're evil people. And it's like, yeah, but most of them aren't, so.
Right, you have one person that goes like AWOL with a study and then usually loses their license because it was poorly done, but five people believe it and then try to speak it like it's truth.
Right, right. And people are just upset because something terrible happened to their specific family member, and so then they latch onto an explanation.
Yeah. Right, and people need explanations for things, which unfortunately too many. Any explanation is better than no explanation, even if it's the wrong explanation.
Right. So this is what makes these documents work so well, is that they're tied to the way that people actually react in these kinds of situations. But it goes on. And then the Red Year. No one foresaw the explosion of Red Mountain or the devastating effect it would have on the Dunmer culture. Your predecessor was kind enough to welcome many of the refugees, particularly those who could contribute to the college's studies. We were quite grateful, which makes sense because Winterhold is on that side of Skyrim, and it makes sense being against the coastline where some of the Dunmer refugees would end up, that they would go there. Also, the Dunmer were known for being very powerful, learned mages, so they would naturally find a place at the college when they were displaced from their home.
Right.
So
all adds up.
It all adds up, right? Like, okay, but you know, like, but foreigners.
Right.
Yep. Then Solstheim was generously offered to the Dunmer as a new home. I was as surprised as any. I did not, however, share the apparent expectation that all dark elves would leave Skyrim. Notice the way this is phrased. It did not go.
Here's your island. Get out.
Right. It did not go unnoticed that many in Winterhold were unhappy at how many mages chose to stay at the college rather than relocate. This was not specifically picked because it feels timely. It's just the 15th entry on the iceberg, but we're going to keep going. And now the storms that have racked the coast of Skyrim for close to a year have finally broken, but at great cost to us all. This great collapse that has devastated Winterhold was unexpected. I assure you that the college has remained unaffected is only a testament to the protective magics placed around it so long ago. It in no way implies that we're somehow prepared specifically for this event, and is certainly no indication that the college was somehow responsible. But you can totally see why people might think that, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. If anything, it made the college like better.
It
separates it a bit, like, you know, for privacy reasons, but basically turns it into this almost makeshift fortress because it's so hard to gain access now, which it's just like, in terms of protecting yourself, it really almost is a benefit.
Yeah, but it also makes sense that, like, they knew they were in a precarious spot with rough weather on the edge of the continent, and they're powerful mages, so why wouldn't they have built protections around the college in order to make sure that if something like this happened, the college wouldn't fall into the sea?
Correct.
Like, that only takes a little bit of just common sense and foresight, you know?
Yeah.
But here's how it ends. I certainly would never hold you accountable for the gossip spread amongst the people of Winterhold. That feels backhanded. I would urge you, though.
That's such a backhanded compliment. I'm sorry. That,
go ahead.
That
go ahead.
Specifically was such a backhanded, like, oh, well, you're clearly not this ignorant, as if, like, your choice is to disagree with me, basically saying you're ignorant, or agree with me so that you prove that you're not.
Right. I would urge you, though, to not allow that gossip to take root and become a commonly held belief. I do not wish to see our relationship crumble like Winterhold has, as I assure you the college will remain here a very, very long time. Your persistent advocate, Archmage Denneth.
Now, and then just like a very subtle threat at the end.
Yes, but here's what I think is really interesting about this. Like, the college will remain here a very, very long time. That could be a flex of, like, we are powerful mages, and even if you wanted to get rid of us, you can't.
That's the initial one, right?
That's kind of the first read of that. The second read of this is they're a pair of powerful mages who may be in some sort of association with the Psijic Order and understand some things about the way the future might play out.
Yeah. So it's like, maybe be on the right side of this.
Right. Meaning that, like, I can't reveal to you how I know, but I know that we're going to stay here and we're going to be here in the future.
We'll be just fine.
That's a lot of speculation.
Would you like to also be just fine?
Right. That's a lot of speculation on my side about, like, we don't know specifically about the Psijics, but in the quest line, the Psijic Order does end up becoming involved.
And if there's already an air of being concerned about the power of these mages, like almost like a, oh, okay, well, you know, it's a little unsettling how strong they are. If they actually could, even if they feed into the fact that it's like, well, okay, if you think they did cause this, then you have a concern of like, okay, well, they're kind of dangerous in that regard.
Right.
Them basically flexing, well, yeah, we're not going anywhere, is
right.
You can have that two two ways, yes. where it's like, yes. oh yeah, no, don't, we're here, or yeah, we're here. Maybe you continue to play nice with us.
Right. Like, if we were responsible for the storms destroying the town, then couldn't we also still be responsible for more storms destroying the town while we are safeguarded in our tower?
While we are still safe on this island that we basically created for ourselves.
Right. Right. So I love how multifaceted the read of this is. And I also love how it ends with your persistent advocate, like, hey, I'm still on your side, buddy.
I'm rooting for you,
still,
buddy.
Still on you. We're on the same team.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, this is a lot of fun because it's one of those things that, like, there is not a clear interpretation. It seems yeah. like a lot of people believe it was the college's fault. And it seems like on the surface, the college is saying, hey, don't blame us. It's not our fault. These things all make sense. But they're all, maybe that's also just them trying
not
to
not wanting to say we totally blew this up and didn't mean to
right.
do that.
Or like, oh, one of our students made a mistake while they were messing with like weather magic or something.
Right.
Which far we know many, is a thing. Like weather right. magic.
Far too much giant's toe.
Too much giant's toe. But like in the lore, weather magic is a thing. Like we don't see a ton of it in game, but yes, weather mages, it's very much.
100%. And I mean, there are no sea elves at the time at the college. They're really not common inhabitants. But I was going to say, sea elves, the Maumer, are constantly dealing with weather magic.
Yeah.
Whenever you encounter them.
Yep. Yep. And when, who was it? Uriel Septim, what was it, fourth or fifth? Or the one that went over to Akavir?
Yes.
They dealt with a bunch of weather magic from the inhabitants over there. That's not to say that that information somehow didn't. Or wasn't even possible by some of their own mages, you know, like
exactly.
So there's some fun stuff going on there. So that one's a lot of fun. Let's move on to number 16. This one also one of my favorites. I'm excited to get to this one as well. It is simply titled Cannons. Okay, so though firearms are presumed to not exist within the Elder Scrolls universe, there are numerous references to and depictions of cannons and other sources forms of gunpowder throughout the series. And so this is one of those ones that on the surface, most of us think, wait, gunpowder? Like there's not guns? They don't.
Yeah, you're not getting in shootouts.
Right. There's no cannons. Like what? Most of the games that we've played, like I loaded up Skyrim today. I've been messing with some mods. I didn't come across any cannons. Like, what are you talking about? Well, guess what? We have an entire list of all the times that gunpowder, explosives, any of that kind of stuff shows up in Elder Scrolls. So let's go back to Daggerfall, Elder Scrolls 2. The book Jokes, written by Boutha Sunhaus, contains the following line. Why was the Sentinel army so useless during the World War of Bettany? The cannons were too heavy, so all three garbage scows sunk, implying that there were ships with cannons or cannons on shore that were shooting at ships. What do you think about this one?
Which is interesting because you do, at least in the Elder Scrolls Online, have a bunch of naval-based battles, and it's always ballistas, boarding the other side,
bows,
martial weapons, no cannons, nary a cannon to be seen.
No cannons, but yet.
Blunderbusses, which were great for clearing the deck. None of that.
I'm moving my screens around. So that's just Daggerfall. Let's move on to Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard, your favorite game, Lotus.
Yes, favorite in the series.
The first one that Todd took point on, by the way. So that's always fun.
It definitely doesn't give me a twitch.
Cyrus can find barrels with visible wicks in the goblin caves beneath Strauss Mackay. Lighting them with a torch creates a delayed explosion. That seems to imply gunpowder. Also, in a cutscene of the quest Attack on the Palace, the sounds of explosions can be heard between dialogue with Amiel, Richton.
I forget if they say, I probably say his name. I don't know. It's been years since I've suffered through Redguard.
Yeah. So this other guy and this other guy, Dram, during the events of the second battle of Hunding Bay, Richton exclaims, "It's the Restless League. They're blowing up our ships." Not sinking our ships, blowing them up. Again, implying explosives of some sort. So that's Redguard. But Redguard is kind of piratey, right? There's a lot of ships. But and
Redguard,
like,
is very, very piratey. Yeah, Cyrus is essentially just a really cool pirate.
Yeah, so it kind of makes sense that maybe they would have expanded the lore in that direction a little bit way back in time before they kind of established the series in other more significant ways. So let's move on to The Elder Scrolls III, where the series really started to establish its lore and solidify a lot of these things. During the events of the quest, A Show of Power and the Blade of Nerevar, the Nerevarian will acquire an item called the Dwemer Satchel Pack, which creates an explosion used to create debris while exploring the Dwemer ruins of Bams Omshend. Dwemer words are always weird here. But okay, so this one seems to imply that maybe the Dwemer had explosives, which I feel could be reasonable.
That totally tracks, because the Dwemer have all sorts of weird stuff.
Yeah, they've got crazy technology, a lot of steam-powered stuff, machinations, these combinations of like mechanical parts, but also magic all fused together. I would imagine that if you had the magic to do something with some other mechanical parts, that you could create some sort of explosive, even if it wasn't gunpowder and traditional sense. There's another one, though. Within the forgotten sewers of Old Mournhold can be found strange devices that are effectively dwarven proximity mines. More explosives.
Yep.
So more Dwemer stuff. So now we've moved from pirates, Redguard pirates, to Dwemer with explosives. Okay. That was Elder Scrolls 3. Nothing for Elder Scrolls 4. But if we move on to Elder Scrolls 5, the Dawnguard expansion. In ancient technology, the Dragonborn can acquire schematics for creating explosive crossbow bolts. This feels a little bit more like some of these also felt kind of like, oh, I can kind of justify that in some way. Mm-hmm. But this one's like, you can just make explosive crossbow bolts.
And just people choose not to do it very frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's not one of the most popular thing. I mean, it's an expansion thing that you can do, but like, it is possible. Are those magical bolts, or is
right,
there
are
gun
they
power?
Magic, or are they just like, because you'd think if they're schematics, they're probably not magic. It would
it
be
sounds
more
physical.
Mechanical.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe the crossbow bolts, but let's move on to Elder Scrolls Online. We have a few different entries here. In Broken Bonds and the Serpent's Beacon, the Vestige is tasked with creating a firebomb using fire salts and kindle pitch. I remember this, and I didn't think anything weird about it. I was just like, well, maybe they, you know, just realize that if you combine those things, they're explosive, but that effectively does what gunpowder does.
Right. And I kind of like how that one's got a little bit of an explanation to gunpowder, like, oh, kindle pitch. And then like, again, you've got the Atronach fire salts. It's like, that's
right.
You know that fire salts work like fire, because there's the quest in Riften where you collect the fire salts to heat the guy's furnace. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they work like fire. So if you find something flammable or explosive, it's kind of neat that it's just like, other than just straight up fire, well, here's an element that you can use. Like, you sprinkle this on this fire and it blows up. Like,
right. Yeah. Like pitch, right? Like oils and pitch and tar and those kinds of things are all flammable. So it kind of makes sense. You put something flammable with something that makes fire together, and either more fire or an explosion happens of some sort.
More fire or boom, boom.
Right. Now, this feels a little bit less controllable. Like, you wouldn't be able to put it in, say, a gun or a cannon. It feels probably more volatile than that. But
true. Or you could, like, depending upon those schematics, because I'm curious how in-depth they are, because I do not remember those schematics off the top of my head. But if you had, like, half of a vial on the tip of the arrow, half of it is like fire salts and the other half is pitch. So then when the impact hits and they combine, it could blow up.
Right,
like,
right.
Type of thing. So you could almost make a mechanical contraption that as a result becomes almost like a bullet.
Yeah. Well, in ESO, that's the crossbow bolt. In ESO, where it specifically mentions fire salts and pitch, you're creating a firebomb, which is kind of a similar kind of thing.
Which is similar premise, right.
Because do you light a wick and then because the fire salts are there, it catches better or is it a combination? Is this kind of like, basically what you're describing is like a nuclear bomb where you have an explosion that pushes the material together and makes it blow up even bigger. Like, is there something like that going on?
Yep.
I don't know. But we also have this one. In Disorganized Crime, Red Rook bandits set explosive traps. So maybe they know about the fire salt kindle pitch combination. Don't know about that. In the book, Auradon explored Seven, recounting the sack of Skywatch. Fenlil, the Wayfarer, writes, "The city finally fell when a slowed warcaster filled his voluminous gullet, wonderful words, with volatile alchemical reagents and threw himself at the base of the cliffs. The resulting explosion toppled much of the extended rock face and plunged the ruins into the sea." Now, is this just weird slowed stuff? Weird slowed magic?
This one sounds like weird slowed stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, probably.
You could turn yourself into a bomb, I suppose.
Volatile alchemical regions. Like which regions? Which ones? How did that work?
Right.
Why did they go off in his stomach? You know, I don't know. But it sounds like that what this is telling us so far is that there has definitely been some work towards explosives if they don't actually have functioning gunpowder or black powder of some sort.
And this is sort of a thing where we had discussed this a little before the show about, again, because there's so many layers to this iceberg, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But one of the things is, especially when it relates to the Dwemer, you get a little more technologically advanced than they typically play with in the series, where it tends to be low or high fantasy, depending upon the area you're in and time period you're in and stuff like that. But again, much more like medieval area. Whereas when you get to the Dwemer, you get a little more steampunky. With a lot of this stuff, with their mechanical creations and stuff like that. You've got, you know, the Centurions and the Dwemer spheres and stuff like that.
And the big tubes of structures underneath the ground that are delivering steam places, probably.
And tonal magic, which is, it seems a lot like, it's like, well, no, you're controlling sound in ways that it's like, but it's funny because the first two you started with were the two examples I wanted to specifically give, where it's like, when you've got, like, they're referring to these ships and stuff like that, there are airships in the same vein as this, where it's just like, this is not a common thing, but you can see an airship fly overhead occasionally.
Do you think we're going to get it? Everyone's been talking about ships maybe in the next Elder Scrolls game, Elder Scrolls 6.
Do like airships?
My assumption has always been water ships.
Boats as opposed to like an airship.
What if there are airships?
That would be kind of wild. Because
that would be awesome. That would be so cool.
The other one, other than two, was Redguard. You actually get in a boss fight on a Dwemer or just like on an airship type of thing. And it's like, they're very Dwemer inspired. It's just like, it's that steampunky part that you don't see in the series too much, which is why the gunpowder thing just seems like almost like not totally a lost art, but like one that's just sort of, maybe because the Dwemer are thought to be almost like evil in so many ways, because they've sort of denounced faith and were all about logic and reasoning at the extent of any type of humanity type of deal.
Right. Maybe, and they like, did their atrocious things, absolutely.
100%.
Yeah.
But like, I wonder if, you know, does the idea of gunpowder or Dwemer-based things like that come with a stigma where it's like, well, okay, maybe we want to go that far when it comes to it. So that's why it's not a common practice or use in the series.
I mean, it could be beyond just a Dwemer thing. It could be something that, say, the Red Guards have some history of knowledge from Yakuda about or something like that. And because Tamriel is so dangerous and unstable and constantly being attacked by Daedra, you know, every age of the world.
Literally everything just blowing up all the time.
If things get blown up, you know, like Tiber Septim takes a Numidium and just tramples over everybody, you know, like this kind of stuff happens a lot. So it would make sense that there might be just whole swaths of technology and knowledge that are just lost to time on occasion. And there's the whole debate about, like, it seems like if you go from Morrowind to Oblivion to Skyrim, that the technology is kind of going backwards.
Yes, oftentimes it really does, especially when you have, in terms of like magical restrictions, which, you know, obviously we had gone over it either last episode or the episode before with the Levitation Act, where you weren't allowed to use, where spells and stuff like that start becoming like, well, all right, no, we can't use this anymore.
You're restricted.
Exactly. So like, in a lot of ways, yes, they're almost going backwards in many ways.
Yep. Well, we still have a few other examples, because those are the mainline games in like ways that it comes up in those. But we also have the Elder Scrolls Legends, which has card art for the Iliac Sorcerer, which clearly depicts a ship with cannons on board. I'm using this picture in the thumbnail for the YouTube version of this episode because
I always support any version of Elder Scrolls Legends art.
Yeah, the art is great. And on top of it, there's a cannon on the bottom of the image. You're on a boat with the cannon. And that artwork was all done by actual human beings. So you can't blame it on something like, well, someone AI generated and put it on the internet or something. It's like, no.
I don't know if he specifically did that one, but I was going to say, whenever you see my Twitch or whatever, it was done by one of the artists who did some of the Elder Scrolls Legends artwork. And I can confirm, I've talked to him. He is a human.
Yeah. Human
before
being.
All the AI slop.
Right, with actual art chops. So, but then there are some texts that even refer to things. Kynes Challenge, a hunter's companion, says, I'll just read it. What Ingjard hasn't shared with us was the additional gift she had been saving for this special occasion. A small charge of explosive powder quarreled away since Windhelm. Lord Vivek's sword meeting with Cyrus the Restless. The locals have never seen fireworks, and we stole plenty from Ko. Or Tiber Septim's sword meeting with Cyrus the Restless. I never thought I would live to see a chapter mark priming the cannon. Our sunbeam is already up. Also, more canon references in that same conversation. So these things do show up in conversations throughout the series as well, or in a book. So, yeah, I mean, if you go back and play Redguard, you actually can like see the picture of like the barrel with the wick, and then you have to put a torch on it, you know, like, or satchel packs in Tribunal. Like, you can see them wrapped up. Now, you can't actually see the material inside of it, but kind of feels like it's absolutely on board for being some sort of physical explosive device that was made.
So. Yeah. It just seems like a form of something that is not commonly used type of deal.
Right, right. So
more
I
so than
wonder,
it does not exist.
I wonder if we're going to get Elder Scrolls 6 with actual explosives, gunpowder, and expansion of weapons. Maybe we move forward in time and technology has advanced a bit, and then we get kind of a whole different take on that kind of thing.
And a PvP shooter mode? No, I'm just kidding.
PvP shooter mode? Yeah, yeah. I don't know about that one. But it would be cool, instead of like crossbows, to have like pistols and to have like the technology where, like, I don't know, it can dent the armor or something. That would be cool.
Right, yeah. Like, would that be weird? Like, I don't know. Like, because it almost feels like that's too far in the setting to me.
Well, as long as it's not like overpowered. It's not like they're pulling out M16s or something, you know?
Well, yeah. No, I would assume it would be flintlock style or stuff like that.
But yeah, like single fire, high damage, bad, right. Like low range, that kind of thing.
Yeah, would we want to get into that, not time period, but time period of weaponry? Because it obviously doesn't relate one-to-one to the series. This is just made up. But,
well, here's another take on this. There is speculation that they will take some of the building technology that they've used for the other games, Fallout, Starfield, and those kinds of things, to not just do ship building, but maybe building your own castle. Because that would make sense.
Almost certainly. You can see from one Bethesda game to the other.
Right.
When something is implemented, it's usually their idea, and each game it gets perfected more to the next one.
Right.
And
so instead of having
a real big thing for a lot of people. I love it. I think it's super fun.
Right. So this is where I'm going with this. So instead of having just like your own little home, like you can have in Skyrim, or building a settlement, like you can in Fallout or whatever, what if there's actual events that happen in the game where you build a castle and the castle gets sieged?
Okay.
And part of the sieging of the castle is having to defend it against units at a distance. That would mean things like catapults or trebuchets, but it also could mean early versions of cannons.
Okay. Yeah. I see where you're going.
So I don't know. Like, there's some potential there. I'm sure that would be highly debated. But in my mind, if there's a good lore explanation and they've already been hinting at it in the lore with explosives and gunpowder already, then that already works. And if it's fun, I'm up for changes, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think of how I would feel with the option for guns in the series. It seems, I don't know. It seems like, would that push the timeline feel too far forward, or would it still be okay? Because
every game has kind of a slightly different feel, you know?
Well, and like we literally just discussed, it's always sort of there, just never at the forefront.
Right. So Or to just have it, yeah, again, like maybe not the main part of the game, maybe not the main factions, but like sub factions that are developing, you know, new technology and are just starting to roll out. So not everybody
or
has
like
it.
Like hyper rare end game things where there's like a couple you could get or something like that. Cause sometimes mm-hmm. you can get like, what is it? The Blood Skull sword. It's like, okay, well, there's one of those.
Right.
Like,
right.
Later in the game, do you find like one pistol and it's like, okay,
yeah, one inventor. Right. You come across some other Dwemer who just never disappeared for some reason. And they're running a workshop and it's been like hundreds of years. And they're like, here, try this device I made. And you're like, what is
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
And they're like, point it over there and pull the trigger. And you're like, holy crap.
Other than just like this group of bandits all had flintlock pistols.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. Number 17, the Chimer. Some of these we've absolutely covered in the past, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on them. An ancient Aldmeri tribe who rejected the ways of the Somerset Isles and followed the prophet Veloth in an exodus to modern day Morrowind. Eventually, they were cursed by Azura to become the Dunmer. So if you're not up on Chimer lore, they're basically Altmer who broke away from the Altmer early on in, I believe it was the Morrithic era. And made their way up to Morrowind. They started worshiping the good Daedra, and then they went against the good Daedra with the tribunal, and they were cursed into having darker skin and red eyes. So is that a good summary?
That, I mean, that seems pretty accurate. I don't really, sounds about right. I mean, yeah. Like, this is one of the ones like, and it's funny because some of these iceberg parts, so to speak, it's just like, yeah, this is just kind of like the history of.
Yeah. Yeah, this
is how things form.
These are still at the top of the iceberg, yeah,
we're still above water.
This is not too controversial, you know. Yes, there were Chimer. They're no longer around, unless you consider, you know, I don't know, Vivek is like half Chimer because he's like split in half. And Almalexia was still golden.
Almalexia was still golden. Sothisil was fully turned, and yeah, Vivek was 50.
Half and half.
And that was right. Kind of the thing. It's like you saw the full spectrum.
Right. Right. So there's some of that still. But, you know, if you play the more recent games, the Tribunal's no longer there because they're gone. So, yeah. So no more Chimer, as far as we're aware. Number 18, the Missing God. This gets brought up all the time. This refers to Lorkhan, the mastermind behind Mundus's creation. He was killed by Trinimac and his fellow at Ada during the convention. Trinimac helped. It was Akatosh is also given primary credit for tearing his heart out and throwing it into the sea. There's a lot of debate, and Lotus and I have gone over Lorkhan many different times. Lorkhan is roughly the same as Shor for the Nords. There's a lot of speculation that individual characters in the lore represent or are the spirit of Lorkhan coming back into the world, and they are doing things, who knows, like the idea that Tiber Septim was able to become a god was because there was a hole left in the pantheon by the removal of Lorkhan, but then some people speculate that he always was Lorkhan. Some people speculate that the player character in the mainline games is always Lorkhan. Right,
you're the one that's causing the change.
Right.
Like you are, like, there are some definite fourth wall breaking concepts with this. And it's like, since you're the one causing the change, you're essentially the god of change.
The god of change, right.
And it's like the player itself is what chooses that. And it's kind of neat to have that be like built into potentially the lore.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's even speculation that Akatosh and Lorkhan are one and the same, and they're just different aspects of the same individual. And you've got kind of this bipolar kind of thing going on, this duality, which could be matched in similar ways to Anu and Padme, who everybody came from. And there's a duality there, too. So why wouldn't there be a duality among the greatest of the Aedra?
Right.
There's all sorts of ways to interpret this stuff over the years. And if you want more on that stuff, go look up the episodes where Lotus and I bring up any of those topics because it'll come up. So there you go. Yeah, that's number 18.
That one's not worth doing here. We've got full episodes on those.
Yeah, that one we'd be here for 10 hours recapping everything we've talked about over the years. So go look that up if you want more information about that. This one, I think, is very cool.
It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.
Curio plagiarist. What? What does this mean? Well, everybody knows of the Lusty Argonian Maid book series. Turns out the Lusty Argonian Maid was retconned in ESO to be a traditional oral story created many years before Crassius Curio's birth, which led many to theorize that he stole the work and claimed authorship many centuries later. Additionally, the Argonian maid lifts her tail herself, the actual maid, that's her name, lifts her tail, which is a wonderful name, appears to be an actual real person who lived in Tamriel, if the crafting motif books are to be believed, further muddying the story. So essentially what happens is this book gets included in the Elder Scrolls canon of books from, I believe it was Morrowind on.
Yes.
You come across the Lusty Argonian Maid and everyone's like, in fact, the person who wrote it as a joke and snuck it into the game. And we talked about that a few weeks ago, I believe. Yeah. And then it became a fan favorite because people were like, oh my God, this is amazing. But it also helps fills out the world, right? Like, why wouldn't there be a book like that? That totally makes sense. And then that book shows up and it's just attributed to Curio, Crassius Curio. So everyone thought, 4 years from Morrowind through Skyrim, that, hey, that guy wrote this book sometime before Morrowind, and now it's just a book that people can have. But ESO retcons it and turns it into, well, no, this is actually an older story that he just wrote down and took credit for, and that lifts her tail may have actually been a real person, which is really cool. And again, coincides with this idea that, like, so many of these things actually work the same way they do in the real world, which is how a lot of old stories actually came about from some sort of original tale. The Odyssey and the Iliad, the city of Troy, for years, sure. for millennia, people thought that was just an invented story by some Greek guy named Homer, maybe. Turns out Troy is a real place, and there's a real history there that inspired those works, you know? So why not the Lusty Argonian Maid?
So this one I find kind of interesting because I loved exactly what you said. It is kind of funny that they essentially retconned it in to make it feel like, you know, that is what happens a lot. So that's kind of cool that they did that. This is one of the ones where, just cynically, as somebody who's played The Elder Scrolls Online and tested it out in beta and didn't really get involved with it until like into year one, it definitely, with the way Elder Scrolls Online originally started, it was, how can we not break lore too much and also provide a decent amount of fan service? Because the game was clumsy at the start and became popular.
Oh, yeah.
It had a lot of hype going into it, but it was not landing on a lot of cylinders to start with. It notoriously had a terrible launch. And then
it still felt too early. Like, that was it. Yes. They had spent years working before launch, but it was such a massive undertaking that it just didn't feel fully cooked.
But this one feels one that was put in as fan service. And as a result, it was like, how can we explain why this funny book that people will recognize is in the game? Mm-hmm. More so than an intentional, let's muddy the waters. It felt more like they put it in the game and then came up with a reason that it was in the game.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It feels retconned in a way. Barky says, wait, an oral raunchy smut story? Yes, Barky. But here's an interesting point, and I have a counter to this too, because I think I can justify this. Not sure that is how oral traditions work, though. Can you imagine an elder gathering the village around the fire to tell the story of how a maid seduced her master? Well, but that probably didn't happen. But I bet you could imagine a bunch of bros hanging out fishing, telling stories. And that still counts as oral tradition. So,
right. Lifts her tail can need quite a loaf of bread, according to that story.
Yep. Yep. Or like guys going down to the pub, just being like, hey, man, I heard this guy came in the other day, told me this story. Ha ha ha. Like, that's how the stories get passed down. It doesn't have to be in a family setting at a campfire. So there you go. That one's a lot of fun. I really like that one as well. All right, ready to move on to the next one? We got time for one more.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, we can definitely do one more.
So this one, again, one that we've covered. There was absolutely an episode about it. The Dragon Cult. And if you've played Skyrim and you've gone through the burrows and all of that stuff, you've probably learned some things about the Dragon Cult. The cult of ancient Nords who worship dragons and acted as intermediaries between them and men. They can be seen in Skyrim, ESO, and Legends as Draugr, dragon priests, and ghosts. So they show up in all of those. Anything else you would want to add about that one, Lotus?
Not really. I mean, this one is just kind of like, yeah, all right, this is the Dragon Cult. This was one that it's not really a lot of debate. It's just a thing that's around.
Yeah, yeah. Earlier on in the history of the world, the dragons were just part of the world, especially in the north, especially in Atmora, which is the continent the Nords came from. Right. And they brought with the worship of them with them. But then things kind of turned dark once they got to Tamriel.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there was always like a history of dragons in the series, but like until Skyrim, I guess it was, you know, you didn't have much interaction with dragons very frequently. So I guess it could be maybe a little more nebulous prior to that. But Skyrim really kind of just solidifies the Dragon Cult is a thing.
Right, right. I would imagine, you know what, like, I remember playing Elder Scrolls before Skyrim, and it being a fantasy setting without dragons never really hit me as being too weird. But I would imagine a lot of people probably thought that for a very long time. They're like, why are there more dragons?
Seemed totally normal. And then we just kind of get the weird finale at the end of Oblivion, which was like, whoa, okay, what's going on here?
Right. Yes. But and like, you do see a form of a dragon, but it's not a traditional,
right, traditional dragon. Blood. It's just like, you know, never seemed flesh weird and blood to me in Morrowind. I was always just like, yep, cool. This place is weird as hell.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You get Gwar and Silt Striders and all sorts of weird things, but still no dragons. Yeah, but I'm stumbling over my words. It is interesting to think that we went so long before actually seeing dragons in the series to then finally have them and have this explanation of the Dragon Cult and all of that. It makes me wonder, you know, like, what other things get expanded on in the future? Because maybe there's something else that's obvious that's not gunpowder that we'll see in Elder Scrolls 6 and it'll be like, oh yeah, other fantasy series have that. Now Elder Scrolls has that too, and it makes sense.
Right. And also to the really funny guy, the dragons in Skyrim look like wyverns.
Yes.
It was a long time ago.
Oh, man.
But we had like a old episode of Tales of Tamriel where we brought up graphs and we're like, so what you actually have is a horrible hybrid monster.
Right, right. This is the definition of a worm. This is a wyvern. This is a dragon. It has four legs. These don't have four legs. You know, go through all the details that make them all different.
Conversation though, like just bringing up like, well, this is this. We're just like, it's a very long time ago though.
Yep. All right. So that's it. We're up to number 20 with the Dragon Cult. We're going to pause it there, but we're going to be right back to thank all of our patrons, but also we're going to hit that random page button on the UESP and who knows what that's going to bring. I haven't hit it yet. So we'll find out. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, we're back, and thank you to everybody who helps support the show and keep it going, and welcome to our newest patron. I'm muted. Now I'm unmuted. Yay. Welcome back. Thank you to everybody who supports the show and shows up and chat and comments and joins us on the Discord and all of that stuff. And welcome to our newest patron, Curtis R. You can join us on patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast if you'd like to get all sorts of fun stuff like stickers and t-shirts, ad-free episodes. You can even join us for our patron chats every month. And you can get shout-outs when you sign up. Or if you are one of our Daedric Princes, you'll get shout-outs every week like Kirisi, Blinding Vision, Hersine, Peter R., Austin B., and Mintaka. Thank you so much for your support as well. And to all 124 of our current paying patrons, thank you so much. And thanks to all the people who signed up for free just to stay plugged in. And maybe, you know, just get a giveaway or two every so often when we drop one in there.
That's why they're there.
So welcome to all of those people, and thanks for joining us. Also, if you'd like to help us out in other ways, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read out your review if you leave a 5-star review in the future. I don't have any new ones this week, so if you leave one this week, might get read out next week. And also, just share it with your friends. If you're playing ESO with other people and you're like, hey, check out this show. They explain a lot of cool lore stuff. We really do appreciate that as well, because word of mouth goes a long way. So, Lotus, you ready for our random page?
Yes, how random have we got?
All right. Here, I'm going to send you the link because you're going to understand in a second, and you're just going to pull this up. In fact, maybe I should screenshot this and pull it up. Hold on. I'm going to put this on the screen for the live stream and the YouTube audience so all they can see it. This is from a mod. Remember, this is like a random page on the UESP, which includes mod information, all sorts of things, right?
I'm actually let down that you're not just reading this.
Okay, now you know why I'm not just reading this. Let me get to, can you explain it while I pull this up in the picture?
So, okay, what the random page is called Skyrim Mod Arcabus, Ancient Dwarven Book 7. And
this is the page. This is what it looks like.
Yeah, so for anybody not watching the video, because I know the majority of you like to listen, trust me, I get it. I'm right there with it with my podcast, but
it's a dwarf, it's an ancient Dwemer book written in Dwemer script. It's an ancient
book in Dwemer.
Right, and
it's
so
just symbols.
Yeah, it's, like it's unreadable. On the right, it says
There's nothing to read. I'm just let down that Tom isn't trying to pronounce these words clearly.
I have no idea. Book information: Ancient Dwarven Book Number 7, Arcabus. And it's got some other information, like at the location you can find it from this mod. It's a creation called Arcabus. That's the mod. Found in the following locations. Good luck for me on this one. Thuncharnthum's Library. Mm-hmm. Note, as an Easter egg, the text is actually an English summary of the Epic of Gilgamesh. But I know the Epic of Gilgamesh is like very long, and this is a very short summary. So I wonder if it's just the beginning.
Very short summary.
It's the beginning, maybe, just translated, just transposed with like a, you know, like a cipher where like A equals this symbol and B equals this symbol.
Yes, right.
Something like that. So there you go. That's... Man, you never know what you're going to get when you hit the random page. It's always weird.
I think that definitely has the award for the most random of the pages.
Yeah, we're getting there. Some of these get super weird. So there you go. That's
I hope everybody enjoys that. That's the random page. I would definitely say check out that page for yourself and you know, enrich your experience on the UESP with great pages like that.
Also, why did they pick the Epic of Gilgamesh? Like, that's an ancient,
very specific.
Yeah.
Also, yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so before we go, Lotus, you have anything you want to share? Anything going on?
No, hopefully we'll have a new episode of Tales for you this weekend, assuming we don't lose power via storm. But I think we'll be fine here. So hopefully by the start of next week, we should have a new episode of Tales for you. And yeah, really, other than that, that's about it. I did get my physical copy of The Elder Scrolls Oblivion 4 remaster that I just posted.
Oh.
Because they do still occasionally make physical copies of things.
Yeah,
that's fine. No PC one for anybody who was asking about that, but there is like a console version.
Okay. Yeah, I also saw on a, I think it's the Oblivion Remaster subreddit, that there is a group that is working together to mod that game so that people can play it multiplayer.
That would be very fun.
Yeah, so that, I don't know what the full scope of that is, but seems pretty cool. You can sign up. I just look up Oblivion Remaster multiplayer. I'm sure you can Google it and you'll find their page. Also there, and I haven't tried this one, but this one is something that you can try. You remember how, like, what was it, like 2.5 years ago, they dropped, somebody, I don't remember the mod author, dropped the mod that allowed you to play Skyrim together.
Yes.
And you can still play that.
We briefly tried it. It was very glitchy.
It's a little glitchy. They've patched it a little bit over the years. It's less glitchy than it was. Well, there's a different group that is turning Skyrim into effectively a MMO style landscape where you and like 80 other people can be in the world at the same time. But they're removing all of the in-world NPCs from like the cities and towns and villages and stuff, because the idea is that the players would inhabit the world as those people. So you can role play being just somebody in Tamriel somewhere, but a lot of the dungeons and things can still be explored and adventured in. So like, you could be a blacksmith in Whiterun if you wanted, and then just like make things for people, I guess.
So my dream of becoming Nazim and insulting people for...
Yes. Yeah. You could design, you could
finally arrive.
And I'm 100% sure that you could make Nazim in the character creator, because you just choose the right haircut, the right, you know, just kind of make the face similar or whatever, put on some fancy robes and just strut around all day, just like asking people
being
if they've been to the
condescending douchebag.
Yeah. The Cloud District. Yeah. So yeah, you could do that if you wanted. I haven't tried it out yet, but it seems like it's a thing. So I'm sure you can look that up as well. But yeah, all sorts of weird stuff going on with weird mods and things. So that's cool. Go check that out. Also, I do a bunch of other shows as well. So the Fallout Lorecast, the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, which I'm doing. These just run off my tongue. The Lord of the Rings Lorecast and Retro Recall. And we actually just talked about Doom this last week. It just came out. So if you want to hear
OG Doom, I haven't seen the newest one. So.
Yeah, OG Doom, going back to the mid-90s and playing Doom again for the first time in a long time. See how it holds up.
That game is unbelievably still playable.
It is great. It is a classic for a reason.
I think it was last year. They did the Doom 1 and 2 like remaster or whatever compilation. Mm-hmm. It was Night Dive Studios, and they put in the new expansions that they finished and stuff like that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say Doom 1 and 2 are awesome. The expansion levels, it's something I have. I am a huge boomer shooter nerd. Mm-hmm. With that stuff, I love that style of gameplay. However, the expansions to a lot of those old games, man, you can tell it is not the same group who makes the base games, because just the level layout, I'm like, you don't realize how well crafted they are when playing through them until you play through somebody who is not as skilled.
Yeah, so we also covered Duke Nukem 3D. Like a month or so, month and a half before we did this one. And that's what that feels like to me. It feels like, oh, the people who made Doom knew what they were doing. The people who made Duke Nukem had a lot of, you know, funny things they wanted to put in a game, but they were not as adept at making level design. And
the level
like
design. Yeah. I mean, I love Duke Nukem 3D, but I can totally see that theirs are a little more set PC than easy flow, whereas the Doom levels definitely had their set pieces, but it just had a different flow to it. I've been replaying through the original Quake again, and that's another one. I love the way Quake feels.
Yes.
But each of the expansions to Quake, I'm like, whew, this was not the same quality of level design.
I haven't gone back and played a lot of that yet, but it should be on the list.
It's fun. I mean, they're still good. I couldn't do better. Like,
oh, yeah, sure. Anybody. Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's just, you can tell the difference in experience or just skill or whatever it is, where it's just like, oh, okay, they definitely have different feels.
Yes, absolutely. So that's fun. Retro Recall on whatever platform you're listening to this on, you can get that. And that's going to be it for this week. We'll be back next week with more of the iceberg. It's getting deeper. We're covering, some of these are just kind of surface, you know, they're not all that deep.
Say, we're starting to get below the water level at least.
Yeah, they're coming. Every so often we get something, we're like, ooh, that's an interesting one. It's gonna get dense, and there's a whole bunch to get to. But thank you for being here. Thank you for your support, chat. Good to see all of you, and stay safe out there. We'll see you next time.
Have a great one.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.